Collaborative businesses are on the rise, and this is the Collaborative Business Podcast, a podcast that will help you find answers and provides useful insights to the best ways of working together in partnerships, alliances, and many other kind of business-to-business collaboration. Here's your host, Peter Simoons.
This is episode 17 of the Collaborative Business Podcast. And today is all about legal and alliances, as we talk to Luc van der Laan, who is a lawyer specialized in strategic alliances. Luc will share with us some of the essential elements to look for when creating a strategic alliance, essential elements from a legal perspective, which is different than most people generally look for in alliances. One of them, you will hear Luc share why it's important to have a clear objective and make it explicit in the contract. Well, without further ado, let's dive into the conversation with Luc. Luc, welcome. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Luc, to provide our listeners with a perspective about you, can you introduce yourself and share who you are and what you do?
Yes, of course. Well, I'm a Dutch lawyer. I have my office in Denmark at the moment, but only a small part of my clients are in Denmark and many still in other countries, like in the Netherlands. I've been a private lawyer for the last 23 years, and halfway my career, I've been working for Philips Electronics for 8 years, 4 years for the lighting division, and 4 years for the domestic appliance division. One was very technical, the other was much more marketing driven. So it's a good mix of both parts in a technology-driven company. The reason to start for my own was to give shape to my wish to be more involved in setting up alliances than I could when I worked for Philips. Nowadays, I work mostly with technology-driven companies on their core business activities. In other words, like their R&D program, product development, contract manufacturing, things like that, and of course the marketing and sales, which follows thereafter. This includes both startups in their different phases, but also corporate firms and everything in between. So it's a broad scope of clients. There's a lot of collaborations between these type of companies that I'm involved in. That's one clear part. The other is where I work with European technology platforms, as they are called, which is, a platform where industry, R&D institutes, universities, and so on are gathered to jointly establish a research agenda, which they present to the European Union. There's a big pile of money, and they present their agenda in order to obtain funding for their R&D programs under the various programs that run in Brussels. And these platforms are, in fact, a cooperation between many companies and institutes, which are laid down in contracts between all these companies, and in fact, so they are very broad alliances, as you might call them, with a clearly defined governance and financial structure. Obviously, I also work for individual clients, and quite often these clients enter into cooperations with other parties. Sometimes I could really call this a business collaboration. Sometimes it's just a one-time deal or something in between. But that's, of course, for me to determine the approach in the various cases. Mm-hmm. That's largely what I do.
Okay, interesting. Well, initially, when you introduced yourself, I could almost hear the listener ask, what is a lawyer doing in a collaborative business podcast? But you already answered that question, and we will dive into the legal and alliance parts later on. But when we look at collaboration and the collaborative business spectrum, it's quite a broad spectrum. And you also mentioned a couple of broad elements already in your explanation. What is for you a business collaboration, or what is for you an alliance?
An alliance or a business collaboration is, in my view, a collaboration between two or more companies. Could be of organizations, they could be companies, public authorities, universities, you name it, with a need for each other's resources in order to achieve a new or better results. They don't necessarily need to be aiming for the same results, but of course, quite often that is the case. Mm-hmm. the collaboration usually has a longer term scope in my view, and it's not a one-time deal. So it should be something like, we are going to work on this, that particular project, which could have a very long term, or we are entering into a cooperation in a specific way of conducting our business, which involves both our parties. It doesn't necessarily aim for one project, but it's a new way of doing business for a couple of years, for example. And well, of course, if it's successful, it might continue for many years. And for example, a joint venture is one way of doing this, but it's only one form in which you construct an alliance. But the joint venture obviously is something you do for a longer term, almost by definition.
Yeah. So. Okay, I understand. And one phrase comes to mind that I remember having read in one of your white papers, when you called yourself a legal alliance professional. Mm-hmm. When I combine that with my next question, how important are alliances for your for you and your business?
Well, as a lawyer, for my own business, collaboration, when I advise on a collaboration, of course, the alliance as such is the end product and not something I'm involved with on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Unlike companies involved in the alliance itself. But as a law firm, collaboration is also important to me. I cooperate in various ways with other lawyers. One way in these European technology platforms that I referred at, I work together with one Belgian lawyer. We jointly present ourselves when a project like that comes up, where a new platform has to be established. We present ourselves, we refer to one another, we pick up on the project together if we can. We divide the work between each other and make agreements on how we share the results of that work. So that's a very close cooperation, which I've done many times already in the past. But that's specific for one type of work. So that's one type of collaboration. The other is that I work together with two other small law firms, simply to be able to offer a larger scope of services than just what I do myself. The good thing of that is that these other two lawyers, they are in totally different fields from each other and from mine. So there's a good synergy, because you can offer a good scope of services, and you're not even competing in these fields, because I would never take up, for example, a labor law case simply because I'm not equipped to do so. But there's a very fruitful cooperation, and you can send your clients to someone else if they have specific need for a different kind of legal service. And next to that, I'm part of a global network of lawyers whom I know, and through which I can offer a global scale service, even if you need specific knowledge about local law. There's actually three types of collaboration that I work with in my own practice.
Okay, and when you look at these partners you mentioned, how have you selected them? How do you select partners to become a partner for you?
The one with whom I work on technology platforms was quite obvious. She is the only lawyer, apart from me, who has specialized in this type of work in Europe, as far as I know. We had accidentally worked together on a project like this in the past, and we thought this worked excellently together. We could see each other's quality, skills, and on-time delivery. And we thought, well, if we do this together, we can offer the market the real solution for what they need in this particular market. And so that was almost the obvious choice. The other was working together with two law firms. Is sort of grown over the years. Of course, my clients do not only need advice on technical questions or R&D contracts, they also have people employed, they have housing, all these things. And over the years, I encountered, I sent them to other lawyers who I thought they worked well. And that turned out to be true. And I knew these people already. And after some time, we said, well, let's make it a bit more formal and officially refer to one another if it comes up and it's necessary that your client needs different services. In that case, I by the time we agreed on this, I knew that these people were, first of all, living up to their promises, and secondly, had the quality that I'm used to myself. And so these two were very important to me. If you send your client to another lawyer, you want them to be quick and offer good quality.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned the quality aspect already a couple of times. Indeed, it's clearly essential for you in selecting partners.
Yeah.
Now, you just said that you made this one partnership a bit more formal. Does that mean that you have a legal contract with them?
No, in this particular case, we don't. It's nice, the house of the architect falls down. but we do, let's say it is not very formal. It's more like, well, if we have these kind of cases, we send them to one another. You don't have to be too specific or too formal in a corporation like this, because you have it's really a separate thing. Your client becomes the client of the other lawyer in that particular case. So you don't have to sort of look over his shoulder and look what's going on. You might get an update once in a while, but possibly not even that. So in that particular case, you don't need to be too formal to set up a collaboration.
As the responsibility for the client also moves to your partner.
Exactly. Yeah.
Are there specific elements that you feel that need to be part of a collaboration or a partnership?
In my own or in general? In my own, I need to be. That's part of the collaboration is that you work with someone that you can rely on. You should both be willing to cooperate in a way that you live up to your promises to the other partner, first of all.
Could you share a collaboration, Luc, in which you have been involved that was for you the best learning experience and taught you the most on the topic of collaboration and alliances?
Yes, I can. That was actually the first alliance that I was involved in. When working for Philips, I was involved in the Senseo alliance. The Senseo between Philips and Sara Lee, or rather Douwe Egberts. For those who don't know, it is a coffee machine, slightly bent shape, and you put in a coffee pad, and you can make your coffee. But the coffee machine was made by Philips, and the coffee obviously done by Sara Lee, Douwe Egberts. And I was one of the two Philips lawyers involved in drafting the contract between these parties. And well, the beauty of this alliance is that it connects at least five steps in the product cycle for both parties, where quite often this is only one or two. If you have a joint R&D project, well, then it's a very limited part in the product cycle that you do together. But in this case, they had to jointly develop the concept. They had to jointly start prototyping. They had to scale up mass production. The whole production should be tuned between the parties. And obviously, marketing and sales was done together, because you can't introduce a coffee machine in one country and sell coffee pads only in another one. So it was all pre-agreed and tuned to both parties' businesses involved. And actually, it was also for these parties' first time to set up a collaboration like this. And they had to find out about every step. And quite successfully, they did. I think it was very important that from both sides, people who were very much engaged in the alliance were in charge of the day-to-day management, on the one hand. On the other hand, they had full backup from top-level management. Now, at some point in time, there was an issue that they could not solve between the alliance managers, and partly also because they didn't have the authority to do so. But that was escalated, and top management quickly solved it because they were backing up the alliance and were in favor of continuation of the alliance. And if you don't have that backup from your top management, that would go wrong. Then they might even kill the alliance before it's even born. another important element, I think, in that alliance was that the parties accepted that the profit of each party was not shared equally. As long as each party had an acceptable level of results themselves, it still worked. They said it is okay that the other makes more money this year because we also made a good profit ourselves. It's a bit of the live and let live principle. And that saved a lot of bookkeeping and auditing and so on, which I think was very good for a new alliance like this because they had other points to focus on. And I think it was one of the success generating part of this collaboration, not to look too nitty gritty on the profits that each party made in this. So that was a very, very learnful alliance for me.
And it was for you. You mentioned the first contract, alliance contract you were involved in.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
And so was there something specific that you learned thanks to this working on this contract that you brought forward into your alliances, into your other contracts?
Yes, I do. So in the contracts, you can't really put in the contract, we have full support of our management, but also I always reassure that it's there. But one other thing I always put in the contracts is be very clear about the objectives that you have and make them explicit to one another. And if they're explicit, then I prefer to put them in the contract, so that everybody knows this is what we're working on. And they don't necessarily have to be the same objectives, as long as they are clear for each party. Because sometimes parties think, well, there's another objective, but let's not just tell them, because they don't need to know. And then it turns out, if that is a very important objective, it's not meant simply because the other party is not even trying to meet that objective for you. So that's a very important thing. Put in the objectives of your alliance with the partner. It clearly increases the chance of such objective being met.
Yeah. And clarity in objectives and not having hidden agendas helps create trust.
Exactly.
But having these clear objectives and explicit in the contract, does that mean more work for the partners on forehand before the contract is being drafted?
Of course, it depends on the preparation that they've already done. But if you put the question forward and they can't answer the question straight away, then that means they have to work more on that. And I think that's an excellent exercise for each party involved to say, why actually are we doing this? It could make things much more clear, and they might even come to the conclusion, well, if it's this is really the objective, we don't need the alliance. I mean, that could also be a result. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when I recall earlier conversations we had, I believe this project, this Senseo project, for you was some kind of aha moment that you realized that collaboration is very interesting and essential for you in your business, isn't it?
Yes. That also came up. This was the first alliance that I did for Philips. A few more followed in the years thereafter. And then really I realized this is really working. And it was an important way forward for business development in general, I think, for companies and other organizations. And it was actually this idea that brought me to step out of Philips. Because I thought this is fantastic work. I was really, really taken by it. And I tried to organize a part of the legal department with lawyers that were specifically dedicated to this type of business development, to alliances and so on, to support all the divisions of Philips if an alliance was involved. Unfortunately, that didn't fly, for other arguments, which I could also agree with. But then I thought, if I really want to do this more often, then the only way to do that is to start for my own. So that's what I did some 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And when you then look at a legal contract in alliances, you already mentioned to have clear objectives and make them explicit in the contract. Mm-hmm. What essential elements, and I will include a link to your white paper on this, but what essential elements should people look for when they are in negotiation and drafting the contract, an alliance contract?
Another very important part is, of course, the governance. How do you work together? The difficulty with an alliance quite often is you need to take decisions jointly, which normally a company does on their own. And that requires a way of working, which is different from usually, quite often is different from the normal way of working. It requires a sort of flexibility. I think alliance managers in companies are quite often those people who have to go to management and say, sorry, can't we do it differently this time, and step away from our general, corporate governance, our general way of working, because we're not doing this alone. And you have to be very clear on that. You also need the commitment for both parties to be prepared to do things differently than they normally do within their company. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. Another thing is that once the people in the alliance agree on matters, they must assure to the other party that they can actually do what they agree upon, that they can, that they have control over the parts in the company elsewhere, possibly, that are involved. Because if they can't live up to what they agree upon, you get an enormous amount of frustration, and that, especially if that occurs in the start of the alliance, that easily leads to the alliance to fail. So you need your own company to be able to be flexible. And if you agree on items during the alliance that involve other parts of your company, you need to be very much aware, and you need to promise also, and that's why you need it in the contract, that you can actually, that you have to influence inside your own company to live up to what you've agreed upon with the other party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. There is one other thing. In my workshops, often we discuss the element about the exit clause. Mm-hmm. Should an exit clause, and to what extent should an exit clause be in the legal contract?
I think it's important to have an exit clause in the contract. Whether you have just started the alliance or you've been working on it for many years already, in both cases you need to know what is going to happen if. Or when, sometimes it's clear that it will come to an end at some point in time, but when or if the alliance comes to an end, what happens to your product, your joint baby, so to say. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's a lot of know-how involved, there's a lot of IPR involved that both parties already started to use in the alliance and want to continue with that after the alliance is gone, in new product lines and so on. Do you have access to that? Do you get licenses? Is there a brand name that was built up in the alliance which was totally new? Who can proceed with the brand name, or can both parties do that? These things have to be clear before you even start the alliance, in my view. Because at any point in time, there could be a moment where the parties say, "Well, this is not going to work." And if that means that at that point in time you have to negotiate the consequences of a termination, then the interests have become so much more clear and higher at stake than at the very start of the cooperation, that people sort of dig themselves into trenches and never get out of it, maybe, and this ends up in litigation rather than either a friendly termination or even an adaptation of the alliance, because the consequences of termination are clear and is not what people want. It might even improve, let's say, a process that leads to an adapted alliance, which can easily be done, especially if we talk about a contractual alliance rather than one in a joint venture. You could come to the conclusion, we don't want to end this because there's so much more to get out of this, and stopping this would lead to a result that actually we don't want at this point in time.
Negotiating the exit is easier when you're still in love than when you are ready for a divorce. And you mentioned when a brand is involved. I believe that Senseo is also a typical example where Philips and Sara Lee created a joint brand that didn't exist before.
Exactly.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, when listeners want to enter into an alliance or a collaboration, what would be, from your perspective, the number one recommendation and why?
For finding a partner?
Yes.
Well, first of all, it needs to be a reliable party. In other words, it should be willing to roll out the cooperation in such a way as mutually agreed, without hidden agendas, like I just said. You need to know each other's objectives. And it needs to be reliable in that it can actually live up to its responsibilities under the alliance. I think these two are extremely important to finding the right partner. This is well, the first requirement, I think.
And that's basically, when I listen to these requirements, it's basically regardless of the size of the companies involved.
Yes, well, of course, the size of the company does matter, but you will simply have different requirements if you work with between two corporate companies, or one is very large and the other is very small. But you do need to formulate them. And another thing is, again, I can't emphasize it enough, that if you enter into alliance, at least one person in top management is involved, knows about it, really gets updated on this, and supports the alliance, because otherwise there will come a moment in time that the whole alliance will simply collapse because someone in management says, yeah, we don't need this, let's stop this, and for other reasons which were not taken into account when entering the alliance, and then the whole thing is dead.
So executive support is essential also. Yes, from your perspective.
Absolutely.
I can't agree more. We've seen that a lot of times happening indeed. Without executive sponsor, an alliance cannot be strategic. So, Luc, where can people find more about you and your business?
Well, obviously, I have a LinkedIn profile and a website, which is www.lucvanderlaan.eu. The website is going to be changed, by the way, in the next 2 months, but it's still there. So you can, to a large extent, see what I do.
The address will remain the same, right?
Yes, there may come an additional address, but this one will always be available and leads to my website.
Okay, good. Excellent. And I will include the links in the show notes. So anything you would like to share with our listeners that we have not yet discussed, Luc?
Well, in general, you can see I'm often involved in technical corporations, and there you see many R&D corporations start with enthusiastic discussions on how to give shape to a program. But too often, when such discussion moves to the rights of resulting IP, and that's really something that I'm quite often involved in, you get an extremely long process discussing on who is getting access to the results of what you're doing together, what you're creating. And I have to say, quite often induced by lawyers involved, these discussions take so long that everybody wants to move forward, but the process is stalled simply because of these legal discussions on IPR. And I would recommend people, if they enter into a technical cooperation, or if they tend to do that, that they should develop some kind of a set of rules that you can apply in the various situations, like one between two big companies who have similar resources and work together on a joint goal, and you have one set of rules that you can apply between a big company and a very small company, with the same or different goals, so that you develop, let's say, best practice in that field, preferably even before you start discussing with other parties on the various corporations. Of course, this only applies to companies that have many of these kinds of alliances. If this is a one-time thing that you step into, you probably have to still develop your IPR policy, and that you will probably do in the process of forming the alliance. But for companies who are involved in this more often, they should really find a sort of common way of working that they think is acceptable, and it should be a very balanced way of working, because otherwise, the alliance is not going to fly simply because you end up in IPR discussions that nobody will ever see an end to. Yeah. Be aware of that. Yeah.
And just to be sure, IPR is intellectual property, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So establishing the balanced way of working will save you time in the future.
Absolutely. very precious time sometimes, because the alliances sometimes started because somebody has a good idea, and time to market is an essential. Yeah. And if you don't want to be hampered, you don't want to hamper that process simply by legal talk, which is important enough, of course. I mean, I'm the first one as a lawyer to say that that needs to be arranged well. I mean, don't ignore it, but address it timely and in a way that you think it is balanced. Because if it's unbalanced, there's always one party who says no.
Yeah, I understand. Well, excellent. And thank you for your time, Luc, and shedding a little bit light on the legal aspects of an alliance and a collaboration. It was great to have you as my guest in this podcast episode.
It was my pleasure, Peter.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
So far for the conversation with Luc van der Laan about the legal aspects in creating alliances. And as usual, the show notes are available at simons.com/episode18. And if you enjoyed this episode, then make sure to check out the Alliance Mastery programs to take your business and your partnerships to the next level. It's about relationship, about focus, about process, and about tools to create great partnerships and alliances. And our Alliance Mastery programs will help you create that success in business and in your alliances and partnerships. Check it out at alliancemastery.com. Bye for now. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to the Collaborative Business Podcast. For more insights about business collaboration, partnerships, and alliances, hop over to www.cmoons.com.